Hey everybody, this is Pierre Quinn and you're listening to episode number 94 of the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, I am joined by Brandon Siegel, author of the new book, The Private Practice Survival Guide, A Journey to Unlock Your Freedom to Success. Now, in our conversation, we cover some of the how-to, some of the essential how-to questions of opening a successful private practice. Now, this episode is not just for people who are in private practice. It's for entrepreneurs and leaders from all walks of life. Brandon shares some great insights for you. So, listen up. I'm excited to be joining you for episode number 94, and it's amazing how fast this whole idea of the Leading While Green podcast has been moving along. We're going to be at episode 100 before you know it, and I want to just say thank you to everyone who has supported the podcast from the beginning or just from a couple of episodes ago. Everyone who has shared a 5-star review and some comments on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, I really appreciate it. And I want to encourage you to share on social media, let people know, send them a text message, let them know about the Leading While Green podcast and how much of a difference it's making in your personal leadership. Now, if you listen to the last podcast episode, you'll know the news about my new book, Leading While Scared, How to Find the Courage to Keep Going. My new book is coming out real soon. We're doing a soft release in July, and I want you to be in on it. Hop over to prcquinn.com, hop on my list, and you'll get all the updates on my book, Leading While Scared. Leading While Scared, How to Find the Courage to Keep Going. I'm looking forward to releasing that in July. Okay, on this episode, I'm joined by an author, Brandon Siegel. He's not just an author. He's an internationally known business coach, and he's the president of Wellness Works Management Partners. And his new book, The Private Practice Survival Guide, A Journey to Unlock Your Freedom to Success, outlines some of the challenges that many people in private practice deal with because they weren't trained as entrepreneurs. Sometimes we forget that if we're trying to live off of our passion and our giftedness, if there is a business side that we need to pay a lot of attention to. And in our conversation today, we talk about some of the common mistakes that cause private practices to fail, about developing an entrepreneurial spirit, about long-term and short-term vision, and other keys and strategies to success, including building a great team around you. This is a great conversation. It's not just for people in private practice. It's for entrepreneurs and leaders from all walks of life. Here's my conversation with Brandon Siegel. Freedom and success. Brandon, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Pierre. It's such a pleasure to be part of your show.
So, Brandon, take us back. Talk about your educational journey and how you had to make certain decisions as you were following your career path early on.
Absolutely. So, well, it all starts with the fact that my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, I come from generations of entrepreneurship, and probably like any child in today's environment, I'm, just so everyone knows, I'm 39 years old. So I'm kind of on that brink of millennial / Gen X, but I had to fight against the grain, so to speak, growing up, and maybe it's the middle child in me. But my parents always said that I was built to be a business person, an entrepreneur, etc. And it didn't happen until, I didn't realize it until way after college initially. And so I actually thought I was going to be a theater director. And I went to undergrad. I had a lot of success. I worked on the East Coast and all over. And when I graduated college, I was ready to go, you know, take Broadway by storm, and had the connections and everything. And I had this moment where I recognized it was not right for me. And I had to make a powerful pivot career-wise. And so I had graduated with this degree, thought I was going to be this director, was really excited, and was like, nope, not for me. And all of a sudden, my parents were like, do you remember what we told you? And I said, what? And they said, you are meant to be a business person, Brandon. You have it in your blood. You got to trust it. And so I ended up having someone that believed in me. It was actually a headhunter. And although I did not have the resume for what this company was looking for, he said, just trust me. And back in the day, this was when you could get away with just faxing things. Email was not a big thing.
I remember.
And so they actually faxed my resume in a way that they made it look like it didn't come through. And they just said, take an interview with this guy. And 7 interviews later, I got a job that on paper, I was not qualified for. But in spirit, I was. And I really was able to learn, adapt, and build in an industry, actually, of manufacturing, where I launched the first collegiate division for a company, a licensing division. They had manufactured sports and leisure products, and I actually came on as just an account executive and really thrived at creating relationships with Bloomingdale's and big retailers, Williams-Sonoma, etc. And I had this idea for them. I said, you're already doing all these things. What if we launch this division? And they gave me this opportunity to create. It was the first time where I really realized my entrepreneurial spirit. Although I was working, obviously, for someone, they were paying me to learn and grow, basically, as an entrepreneur. And that was kind of my first taste of it. Then I went back and studied business and marketing and entrepreneurship for an MBA program. And I ended up getting an entrepreneur came and asked me to help him. He had 5 businesses. And so really my whole learning curve actually started just kind of grassroots, like entrepreneurs, helping entrepreneurs, building divisions, running multiple companies. That idea of you could have 5 different companies and what's the operational workflow between all of them, and how do you find synergy in what you do regardless of the industry, the service offering, the product offering, et cetera. And ended up building businesses all the way up to employees of 500 and beyond. And that was kind of like my roadmap. And so to this day, my parents are like, we told you so. It's interesting because my grandfather was a business professor. My father was a business professor. They both wrote books. And I think when my book came out this year, they were like, see, you're living up to what your purpose was. And sometimes you don't know what that journey is meant to be. Mm-hmm. And I always say, I'm like, there's something parents just have. And now I'm a parent of 2 kids. And I think sometimes kids don't want to listen, but parents sometimes do just have this like intrinsic understanding of what their child is going to be best at or what they're meant to be. And obviously the kids have to find their journey and their path. I was fortunate enough that I found it, young enough, but mature enough to really capitalize. And so that's kind of what brought me to where I'm today. About 15 years ago, I was helping executive entrepreneurs and managers and all different things. But the last 10 years, I've been on this journey with purpose-driven entrepreneurs, specifically in all different sectors of private practice, and really purpose-driven entrepreneurship is what I call it.
So help me out with how you define or how you frame private practice and entrepreneurship. And the reason why I'm asking is that many of us, I'm sure many of us listening to this podcast, when we hear private practice, we think like one strain of life. We think, medical professional in that particular industry. But how you frame private practice extend beyond that?
Absolutely. So first of all, we look at industries, and we could say there is a healthcare industry, which is broadening. Mm-hmm. There's education and et cetera. But when you say healthcare, let's start with healthcare. Healthcare is such a loaded term, especially since I think all of society is unhappy with what healthcare represents today. Mm. But if we break it down, you could say that health impact our body is one reason why we get healthcare. We break an arm, we break a limb, we've got all kinds of body issues, healthcare solves it. But then there's this thing called our mind. And as you know, I'm sure that the mental health situation of today is the worst it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And so I always say like feeding the mind is so, important today. And so I kind of couple that with healthcare as well. And then there's the spirit. And that's what fuels us. That's what fuels our brain. That's what fuels our body. That's what gets us up in the morning. And so I actually frame private practice as entrepreneurs that are looking to create something that is a vision of helping society through mind, body, spirit. That's education, that's health, that's wellness, that's doing for others that advances the condition of the humankind right now. And so, and I guess you could say, yeah, so pretty much that's where I'm framing private practice. So I'm working with entrepreneurs who really are drawn to a calling. Maybe they're a service, they're a chiropractor, they're a marriage and family therapist, a acupuncturist, maybe they're even a life coach. They're just trying to transcend the way that they deliver a specific service or offering. And it could be through direct delivery of service, technology, et cetera, but ultimately with the vision of creating a private sector opportunity to change the world through influencing and evolving the way that we function.
What have you noticed in your experience with how you've been able to coach purpose-driven entrepreneurs as opposed to maybe some who weren't so purpose-driven and their emphasis was maybe profit-driven? Have you noticed any distinctives?
Very distinctive difference. So when you're profit-driven, a lot of the times you're just looking at, you know, I say it, the meat on the bone stat, what's left after I do what I do. The problem with, I find a lot of the people that are profit driven, they focus so much on the profit and the need, the pain point, that often the journey gets lost. And I find that you see a lot of entrepreneurs that fail when they're just looking at the profit, the actual messaging of today. When you look at the buyer, when you study what we are as a society and the brands that we buy into, we're buying into purpose-driven brands. When I'm dealing with a purpose-driven entrepreneur that's all about purpose and they identify in that way, the problem is they often forget that the base foundation of any business is profitability. And so what we have to do is we have to work with them to understand that you can't deliver at the highest level if you're not building the foundation of the business model. And the business model is built on profitability. And so I think, you know, what I always say is I'm like, you can do whatever you want with the money that comes in. You can give it away. You can, you know, build your nonprofits, et cetera. But I think they go hand in hand. And I think that the entrepreneurs that are really developing a business concept around delivering a need, but also have purpose connected to it, are going to be so much more successful. One, because they're going to really be focused on making a difference. And I think that's important in today when we look at, you know, even look at a brand. It's funny because I'm at a conference and one of the people who's with me is the founder of Tom's, the shoe company. And everyone could say, yeah, but Brandon, he built a shoe. I'm like, he is a conscious capitalist. If you look at it, he is a purpose-driven entrepreneur. He gives back every sale, everything. So part of that is what's separated him and diversified the way that he's built his business model. Is he a very successful business entrepreneur? Is he profitable? 100%. Is he purpose-driven? 100%. How he has framed the storyline, what he does, what he gives back, and how he's developed a product. Is it changing the world in a private practice side? No. I mean, unless you could say that his shoes help, you know, create a foundation of body stability, et cetera. But I don't think he would define himself as a private practice, but I do think he would define himself as a purpose-driven entrepreneur.
What are some of the advantages of going into private practice, and how can walking down that road really help someone who is looking to be purpose-driven?
So I think the first advantage of private practice is that people want a feel-good story. And I say it in this way, our healthcare system right now has become such a bureaucratic system that there's so many things behind the scenes that people don't see, and it's really unfortunate. And so I think that a lot of the times the doctors, the physicians, the chiropractors, the acupuncturists, all these people that are out there, you know, even mental health professionals, they're getting stuck in a system where they really can't create change to the human condition. And I think an advantage of private practice, and being in the private sector is you have more ability to be creative, create outside the box of what healthcare infrastructure represents today. And I think we're going to find in the next 10 years that the solution to creating a better healthcare system is creating a more advanced private sector and private practice and expanding the role of what these entrepreneurs are doing. And we are seeing it already. I think technology is starting to play a place. I think we're starting to get some smaller insurance carriers that are getting creative. And so even from an entrepreneurial standpoint, there's a company out of the East Coast that's expanded to the West Coast called Oscar. And I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're basically a new form of insurance company that's creating value-driven care. And they're trying to create memberships and engage with the people that are subscribing in a way that we've never seen before from Blue Cross and different things. And they're bringing technology to create more value-added services for the people that subscribe at no cost. So, hey, doctor on demand and telehealth and chiropractor and all these different coaching models and mental health coaching. And I think that private practice entrepreneurs that are thinking with how do we create a better solution at a value-driven price, there's a lot of emerging value and bonuses right now.
When I hear you talk about the benefits of private practice, and I can imagine being in a room of people who maybe are making the decision to say, you know what, I want to enter private practice. I've been part of a system. I felt, you know, a bottleneck, or I felt handcuffed, and I really want to venture this way. But sometimes in those conversations or thoughts in our heads, we actually forget that there is a business side to this whole thing. And can you talk about how your interactions with individuals who were forgetting about the business side of things really kind of gave you an impetus to write this survival guide?
Absolutely. So, well, it's ironic because it started with my mother-in-law who was a private practice entrepreneur. And she created a very successful business, but her problem was that she tried, and I see this a lot in entrepreneurs, is they hit success once and they think they can recreate it and they throw all their money at recreating it in all different avenues and different business models.
Wow.
And so, and they fail. And I'm just being honest, my mother-in-law, fortunately we were able to really create some positive change in her private practice. And, you know, I think you have to look at all the different angles. And sometimes people also forget why they got into the private practice sector in the first place. And so they start with quality and they hit success and then they want to scale. And a lot of the times what scale means is devaluing the quality of what they're offering. And so part of my job is actually advocating for the quality of what today's private practice should be. And so I work with a lot of entrepreneurs that a lot of the time they're only focused on the marketing and the demand, and they forget that there is actually a roadmap and a journey and a foundation that we're going to build. And so I would say that my typical private practice that I find, they're so zeroed in on like, hey, I'm going to heal the world and this is how I'm going to do it. Maybe it's a registered dietitian who's like, I see preventative health as the cornerstone of, you know, bettering our world. And I want to work with people to understand the way the diet influences their family, their life, et cetera. But they're so focused on the service offering, the quality of what they're trying to deliver, the pain point of America. And really they look at it through rose colored glasses, like, oh my gosh, everyone needs this. And it's so big, Brandon, but they don't understand that they actually have to create a business model, a foundation, an infrastructure. There has to be metrics. There has to be an understanding of what market and how we're going to scale and how small do we start. And, you know, how sometimes the markets that we think we want to attack don't align with our goals. And so the other day I was coaching an entrepreneur and she actually, she has such purpose. She wants to change the entire geriatric population through anyone that has a stroke, and she does driver's rehab and does all these amazing services. But when I asked her, I said, how much do you want to make from this business? And they had a really hard time naming it business owners. And I said, and they were like, well, we don't want to go through insurance and we don't want to take funding and we don't want, and I go, well, here's the problem. Your business model is broken. Hmm. And I worked it backwards and I actually showed them the storyline and I said, what you want to deliver and how you want to get it paid doesn't align with your customer demographic base. You have to understand that people that are between the age of 65 to 85 who are in this condition are going to want Medicare. And if you can't build a private pay in that sector at the scale that you want to build, because you're going after the wrong demographic. And so sometimes it's showing them the business model connected to the purpose, because a lot of the time they think in just everything's going to go as planned and nothing goes as planned. And the idea is, how do we make pivots to change in a positive way?
Can you speak to the crazy notion that we can think that things will go as planned without having a plan? Because I know in your book, you talk about the importance of business planning and strategic planning, and not just these aspirational 5-year goals, but really also shorter goals that you can execute. But we find a lot of times entrepreneurs really don't have a plan, and they're kind of just flying by the seat of their pants. And why is that such an integral part of moving forward in your practice?
So, you know, I think it's really interesting because people say you love the strategic plan and you think it's really important, but then you're going to say nothing's going to go as planned. And I'm like, well, of course. And anyone who has had kids understands nothing goes as planned with kids either.
Absolutely.
I remember when, we had our first child and I thought that everything was going to be perfect with the delivery and the this and the that. And it took me understanding that there's a value in having a plan and there's also a value in understanding how to let the plan unfold and how you measure and alter your plan along the journey. Hmm. And so often the problem is that people just want to focus on the end result. They don't want to worry. They don't want to enjoy the actual journey, but they're just about getting to whatever point B is. But if today, everyone who's listening, if I said, we're going to go on a 385-mile journey, and that's all I told you, and you didn't know where to go or the way we're going to go, the vehicle we're taking, how long it's going to take, it's going to be the most unproductive journey of your life. And so we need a starting point. And so we may say, hey, we're going to start here. We're going to get on this bus. We're going to go for the next 3 days. We're going to drive, and we're going to drive northeast, and we might not stop at every part of the map, but at least we have that. And when we don't stop at that milestone, we pivot and we alter our journey. And so I always say you just need a GPS that you're going to kind of stay in line and pivot when needed. And I think it really also comes from metrics. And I talk a lot about metrics because we have to name some fundamental goals for where we're going. Mm-hmm. We have to start with, what are we trying to achieve? And one of the things that I'm a big believer in, and I talk about this in my book, is how do we tap into our fear? How do we embrace our fear? So often the not purpose-driven entrepreneurs, I find one of the characteristics I see a lot in purpose-driven entrepreneurs is they're afraid to confront. Confrontation is their enemy. Hmm. And I believe that confrontation and fear are what drive us to be better because it prepares us. What can go wrong? These five things. And so it's so interesting because I live in that world of like, if something goes wrong, my first question is, okay, what are the five ways that I can handle this? And even funny enough, I'm at this conference yesterday and I saw one of my, I have one of my execs is with me at this conference and I'd seen him like 20 minutes earlier and he texted me and he was like, hey, do you have time to talk? And usually when people text me like that, it's not a good sign. And I'm just being honest, something's gone wrong. So in my head, I was like, okay, what could have gone wrong? Did this? What are all the balls that are rolling? And I literally went through my head and played what I call Russian roulette. And we were like, well, that's a little neurotic. I'm like, yeah, but that's how I prepare so that I'm efficient if something does get thrown at me, so I can make a powerful pivot right away. And I think that that's why we have roadmaps. And that's also why we should always be processing to embrace change. And so creating a roadmap is a foundation in which then we're more prepared to embrace change along our journey. At the end of the day, just so that I finish this story, So I call my exec and I'm like, hey, what's going on? We just saw each other. He's like, oh, I sent the text to the wrong person. I actually was trying to text my son. I hadn't talked to him. And I'm like, oh my gosh, well, I just went through like 15 minutes of what could have gone wrong. And he laughed. He's like, that's you. And I'm like, exactly. Because I always want to be prepared. And I'm ready to confront a challenge at every corner along my journey because I've got such a solid roadmap and foundation and strategy in place that I know I can handle anything.
You talked about really leaning into and embracing fears as entrepreneurs. One of the fears that we can face sometimes, especially when we're talking about scale, is that recognizing in order for us to grow, quite often that means adding people. Mm-hmm. And when I add people, I got to share a vision with them. I have to share responsibility. I have to share leadership. But this is my baby and my business. And I stayed up all night and I went to school and I worked for this. How can we help or how have you helped leaders and entrepreneurs embrace this idea that you're not really going to get the scale that you're looking for if you can't put the right team around you and know yourself in the process?
It's so interesting. I think that when you are on an entrepreneurial journey, it really is birthing a child. And mm-hmm. I say that this is a baby, mm-hmm. but anyone will tell you it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to raise a private practice or an entrepreneurial venture. And what's important is that you've done the due diligence of creating your vision, your mission. And I do think that you need a collaborative effort even in that process because there's so many lenses to look at it. And so it doesn't mean that it could be your wife, your husband, it could be business partners, could be your lawyer, your CPA. But first of all, I think you need to really create the vision behind what this baby represents. Who is this entrepreneurial practice or vision or venture, et cetera. And then when you start to scale, part of your interview process is finding people that are intrinsically motivated with what you do, who you are, and that they bring another tool to helping that, you know, raise that baby. And mm-hmm. I say it because all the time I get these calls and emails and people, I'm very responsive with people that, love to hear me speak and read and all that stuff and all the clients I work with. And recently I had a handful of people reach out and say, I love what you do and I want to do it. And how can I be part of it? And would you mentor me? And can I be part of your team? And I said, well, before you can be part of my team, I need you to understand what you're trying to accomplish as a product, as a service, as a, who are you? And, well, I want to be you. I want to do what you do. I'm like, no, we each bring our own. I refer to it even in a lot of my articles and books as a knife block. And when we're hiring employees, we have to find out what their self-awareness of what they do. I'm me. Don't be me. Be you. We may have overlapping skill sets, but understand, like, are you a paring knife? Are you a butcher's knife? What are you? How do you achieve? And what is that contributing to our baby, you know, to our child? And so I think there's nothing more beautiful than bringing people in to help shape your baby to the next level. And so you have to realize that it's an organization, a business venture, it's a living, breathing thing. It is always changing. And if you are the only one kind of around it, then it's never going to reach its fullest potential because every time, every experience that I have, it shapes and changes the venture. Mm-hmm. And that's what's exciting. That's what's so, seeing it grow up and change and go through all different milestones and seeing what it was 10 years ago to today and seeing what it was, you know, 5 employees to 50 employees. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And obviously the challenges change and whatnot, but that's part of the journey. And I get back to, don't just focus on the end result. I always say, and in my book, I do say this, is like, if everything were to go your way, what would be your ideal end result? But usually that will change along the journey. And so you may say, hey, I want to do this for the next 50 years. And 10 years in, you might say, I'm ready to look at a succession plan. I'm done. And that's okay. But having that vision will really help bring that team aboard. And I really think you should embrace the fact that every person that is working with you is just shaping that experience and that journey to a whole new level. And I think, I truly believe that having a unified team and building a vision and mission and bringing collaboration and letting organically the business venture take shape as you scale, so important. And letting go, let it take its form is the way I say it.
That's incredibly powerful, especially when we look at the ability that we have, the advantage of being able to leverage the backgrounds and experiences of people that we bring on our teams. And for you, how have you leveraged your initial pursuit and passion in the theater industry now in this lifestyle of coaching and working with entrepreneurs?
So I it's so interesting because people say, like, do you miss directing? And one of my college professors actually came out and visited me recently, and she said, you know, do you miss the theater or anything? And I said, I direct every day. And she said, what do you mean? I said, instead of directing a manuscript, I am writing and directing a business venture. I direct people. I direct a vision. And so what I recognize is I wouldn't be the leader today that I am if I hadn't gone and studied directing. Because what directing taught me, in all transparency, is really to take a foundation of information and bring it to life. And bring it to life through people and others and leading a team of people to create a vision into a reality. In the case of theater, it's a show. In the case of business, it's a business. So I am creating a business plan and strategic plan, and I am bringing it to life and empowering others to see the vision of what this manuscript, this strategic plan, this, you know, business plan is doing, and it evolves every day. And so it's amazing, but I use it through and through on a daily basis. And I think it's really how I lead an organization of hundreds of employees, is really through that lens.
So hypothetically, say I'm an executive coach and I got a couple of clients that I work with, and I have a small office space that I'm renting, and things are going okay. I think I'm getting some revenue that's coming in. But when I go home at night, outside of the coaching element, I have to admit, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. And someone says, hey, you should pick up this book, The Private Practice Survival Guide. If you got a chance to get on the phone with an individual like that, what would you tell them to convince them to pick up this book?
Well, I would say, first of all, are you looking for inspiration to get different perspectives on how you can deliver what you're delivering on a whole nother level? And so I always say, did you create a job for yourself that you love, or are you trying to create a business that's going to work for you day in and day out? And a lot of the time people, they don't realize the potential and the opportunity because they only see things through a single lens of their own experiences. So the hope is that this book is going to unlock perspectives that motivate you to create on a whole nother scale and tap into purpose and opportunity that you never thought was possible.
My guest today has been Brandon Siegel. He's a recognized leader in today's private practice environment. He's a frequent keynote speaker and trainer for organizations, associations, and universities. 15 years of executive leadership experience supporting private practices, and he is the author of The Private Practice Survival Guide, A Journey to Unlock Your Freedom to Success. Hey, Brandon, before we get off the call today, what's the best way to catch up with you? Is LinkedIn, social media? How can we get our hands on the book?
Absolutely. So first of all, you can go to www.brandonsiegel.com, BrandonSiegel. That's my website. I've got another website called www.wellnessworksmanagementpartners.com. Either website's good. One's my consulting management practice. One is just me. I've got articles. I've got a podcast. I've got all different aspects related to entrepreneurial, purpose-driven entrepreneurship. Book is available at Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, all over. Check me out on LinkedIn. Brandon Siegel is my username. Would love to connect with each and every one of you out there. And again, Pierre, thank you so much for having me today. Truly a pleasure speaking with you, and honored to be on your show.
Great conversation with Brandon Siegel about his new book, The Private Practice Survival Guide. And I want you to hop over to BrandonSiegel.com, find out more about Brandon and how you can get your hands on his book. I know it may sound a little different this week, and that's because I'm podcasting the intro and outro on the road. For the next several weeks, I'll be traveling, but I'll still be pushing out episodes in the Leading Wild Green podcast. So make sure to stay tuned. That's all I got for this episode. So until next time, take care and God bless.